Turn to Proverbs 6:34. We're going to finish up Proverbs chapter 6 tonight and get into the first verse of Proverbs chapter 7, Lord willing. Proverbs 6:34 says, "For jealousy is the rage of a man, therefore he will not spare in the day of vengeance." So we're still talking about Solomon's warning here to his son to stay away from the strange woman, from the adulterous, whorish woman. And now he gets into some practical reasons, as he did in the previous couple of verses. But he's getting into, I guess, the brass tacks of why you don't want to do this, because on top of being judged by God for it and being condemned as a sinner, you could also be judged by the offended party, and it wouldn't be pretty. And that's what Solomon is getting into here. He says, "For jealousy is the rage of a man." And I would say that jealousy, or that adultery, would cause more jealousy than any other sin. I can't think of another sin that would provoke jealousy like adultery would. And jealousy is an interesting word here. The primary definition of it, the first definition, is not what we typically think of, but the Bible does use it in this sense, actually, and in the other one as well. It's the quality of being jealous. It's zeal or vehemence of feeling against some person or thing, anger, wrath, indignation. We normally don't think of jealousy just as vehement anger. We more think of it as like that feeling whenever you feel like, I guess we think of jealousy leading to anger, but we think typically of jealousy as that feeling that you get when somebody's taken something that's not yours and you feel like you've been offended, you've been imposed upon. And then anger comes out of that.
It makes me think of being covetous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of...
In a way.
It's the only thing is it would be a... It wouldn't be like covetousness in the sense of you would be feeling that desire towards something that rightfully belongs to you, whereas right. Covetousness, you're feeling that desire for something that doesn't. But yeah, it would be a similar feeling, mm-hmm. although justifiable in the case of jealousy. It is solicitude or anxiety for the preservation or well-being of something, vigilance in guarding a possession from loss or damage. And that's basically what I was trying to say a minute ago, where you have that feeling where you want to keep something for yourself, and then anger is often how you try to affect that and try to make that happen. It's the state of mind arising from the suspicion, apprehension, or knowledge of rivalry. Again, what I was trying to say. In love, etc., it is fear of being supplanted in the affection or distrust of the fidelity of a beloved person, especially a wife, husband, or lover. So it ultimately comes down to that emotion of fear. It's the fear of losing something that's yours, and then that feeling of fear then leads to apprehension, and it leads to a sense of rivalry, and then that usually turns into the sense of anger, the feeling of anger where you want to make sure you don't lose that thing. And the Bible does teach that jealousy provokes anger. We look in Deuteronomy 29 and verse 20. Jealousy is not necessarily a sin. It can be. You could be jealous over something that isn't yours or isn't rightfully yours or that you should be sharing. You know, you wouldn't want to be jealous of your wife to the point where she could never talk to another person, right? That would be overmuch jealousy. But you'd be perfectly justified if some guy's hitting on your wife to be jealous about that, right? That's a different story. Deuteronomy 29 and verse 20 says, "The Lord will not spare him, but then the anger of the Lord and his jealousy shall smoke against that man, and all the curses that are written in this book shall lie upon him, and the Lord shall blot out his name from under heaven." Now that's some jealousy. That's some anger there. When the Lord's going to blot out your name from under heaven, which means he's basically going to kill you, that's some serious jealousy. But of course, one thing we know about the Lord is he's holy and pure, undefiled. He's not a sinner. So obviously jealousy and anger that smoke against somebody, even to the point of killing them, is not a sin. And if you're God anyway, when somebody is offended against your holy law, he reserves that right. Deuteronomy 32 and verse 16 says, they provoked him to jealousy with strange gods. With abominations provoked they him to anger. And this, though you wouldn't maybe think about it at first glance, but this really ties in with what Solomon's talking about in Proverbs chapter 6. Israel provoked God to jealousy with strange gods. Well, God refers to strange gods and idolatry as whoredom and fornication and adultery. He calls it that in the scripture many different places. And so when God sees people worshiping false gods instead of him, it makes him jealous, just like a man would get jealous if he saw a man trying to take his wife. Because the parallel there between religion and worshiping God and a man's love for his wife, that's a parallel that the scripture makes. And it makes perfect sense because Christ's church is called his bride, right? So if Christ sees his church going after another god, it would be like a man seeing his bride going after another man, right? So we see, I mean, it makes perfect sense here why God would be provoked to jealousy by false religion. And then we're told in Psalm 79 and verse 5 that jealousy burns vehemently like fire, which is what the first definition told us in the dictionary. Psalm 79 and verse 5. It says, how long, Lord, wilt thou be angry forever? Shall thy jealousy burn like fire? And then in Deuteronomy 4 and verse 24. Deuteronomy 4 and verse 24. It says, for the Lord thy God is a consuming fire, even a jealous God. So that is equating a consuming fire with jealousy, even a jealous God. And we're told in Hebrews chapter 12 that our God is a consuming fire. And I think this ties in with what I was talking about on Sunday when I was talking about why celebrating pagan holidays, ones that have been Christianized like Christmas and Easter, why that is sinful. And it's because that is provoking the Lord to jealousy, because those were false gods. People used to worship false gods. And whenever we bring that into a religion and do the same thing, change the names, God has the same feeling towards it. And if you think about how angry a man would be if another man came and tried to take his wife right out from under him, and the man would be, I mean, as we're going to learn about here just in this verse, he's going to be very, very angry, full of wrath. God feels the exact same way whenever some false god tries to take our worship, which is exactly what Christmas and Easter are. It's worshiping God the way that heathens worship their gods, and God gets very jealous about that.
When you think of what Jesus did on the cross, and then you think of people decorating their houses with eggs and bunnies.
Yeah.
It just makes me want to puke.
Yeah, I know it. I know it. And any thinking person should wonder, like Conrad used to say, just what do colored eggs and Easter bunnies have to do with the resurrection of Jesus Christ or the crucifixion? And obviously they would have nothing to do with it, except they have something to do with fertility, right? Eggs and rabbits. Rabbits breed, like, you know, very prolifically. I think that's the right word. And eggs are a symbol of life, obviously. And so it makes perfect sense if you understand where the holiday came from. Mm-hmm. I mean, in fact, that's the real way to celebrate Easter. If you want to celebrate Easter correctly, use eggs and bunny rabbits.
And leave Jesus out of it.
And leave him out of it and go have an orgy somewhere. That's the proper way to celebrate Easter. Mm-hmm. And I told people, when I was overseas, when I was first converted, first year I was converted, and people were talking about Easter, and I told them that. I said, well, if you want to celebrate Easter, go have an orgy. That's the proper way to do it. And of course, that probably sounded sacrilegious to them, but it's absolutely 100% true. That is the proper way to celebrate Easter.
I was going to wait, but given what you said about that connection between fornication and worshiping other idol worship, how that's always tied together in the Bible, I've been wondering since I think you were talking Sunday, when James named those four things that the Galatians, just have them just think about these things, and you said three of those had to do with idol worship, and I was thinking, really, I guess he probably meant fornication in what we think of as the basic sense, but since, given that the other three had to do with idolatry, mm-hmm. maybe that kind of did too.
I thought I said that three of them had to do with dietary law.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did you? Yeah.
I think that's what I said.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which, one of them would definitely be idolatry, things sacrificed to idols. And the fornication, I think the fornication there is probably just referring to fornication in the primary meaning, but, you know, that it certainly does apply to that.
Yeah.
And the analogy gets even taken further in Jeremiah. The Lord writes Judah a bill of divorcement because of her idolatry, her adultery against him. And then he tells her to return. So he was married to Judah, and he writes her a bill of divorcement because she committed spiritual adultery against him by going after idols.
And what was that? Where was that?
Jeremiah. I think it's maybe Jeremiah chapter 3. Yeah, Jeremiah chapter 3. And verse 6, I suppose. Start there. The Lord said also unto me in the days of Josiah the king, hast thou seen that which backsliding Israel hath done? She is gone up upon every high mountain and under every green tree, and there hath played the harlot. And I said, after she had done all these things, turn thou unto me, but she returned not, and her treacherous sister Judah saw it. And I saw when, for all the causes whereby backsliding Israel committed adultery, I had put her away and given her a bill of divorce, yet her treacherous sister Judah feared not, but went and played the harlot also. So here you have playing the harlot attached to green trees and idolatry, and God writing her a bill of divorce, putting her away because she committed adultery. So it really all ties in there with what I was talking about at the end of the last sermon, on the pagan names part, and this one. It all goes together there pretty well. Now, jealousy causes the offended party to mete out punishment. The Lord does this, and men do it too. Now, the Lord has the prerogative to do it. He has the right to do it. We don't, and I'll get into that. We should let the Lord take care of such things. But, as this verse is going to show us, a lot of times when men are in this position, they are not going to let the Lord take care of it. They're going to take care of it themselves. Exodus 20 and verse 5, this is part of the Ten Commandments, says, thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. So this jealousy breeds a desire to punish. The Lord wants to punish because of this jealousy. And this punishment even is intergenerational to them that hate him. Third and fourth generation. Now, if the second or third generation was a godly person, like some of the kings of Israel, right? They'd have a very ungodly king, and then the son, like Hezekiah was an example. He was a good king that was born to a bad one, as we saw there in the Ahaz study. He doesn't hate the Lord, and therefore the Lord's wrath isn't against him down to that generation because he doesn't hate him. But to them that hate him, it's a generational curse. And then look at Numbers 25 and verse 11. There definitely can be an application made to Proverbs 5, 6, and 7 about idolatry and false religion. That's a secondary thing for me. I think it would be an error to say that this whole thing is an allegory and it's really about idolatry. It's not. It's about adultery. It's about the strange woman. But it does apply to that in a secondary sense. Numbers 25 and verse 11. It says, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, hath turned my wrath away from the children of Israel, while he was zealous for my sake among them, that I consumed not the children of Israel in my jealousy. So he was about ready to destroy the nation, or at least a big chunk of them. You probably remember what happened with Phinehas. What just says here, just a few verses earlier, he took the javelin and shish kebab those two fornicators, and that stayed the Lord's wrath. He was ready to judge the nation. In fact, there was a plague. Right there, you see in verse 9, 24,000 died, and then the Lord stopped once Phinehas executed judgment. So the jealousy of a man is strong and cruel towards the man who tries to take his wife from him, and understandably so. If you look in Song of Solomon 8 and verse 6, Song of Solomon 8 and verse 6. This is a love letter from Solomon to his wife, and she's writing back, they're writing back and forth to each other. And this definitely has a secondary application to Christ and his church. I think some people like to take it as the primary application, but I think, once again, it's a love letter primarily. It's a husband and wife, and it has the secondary application to Christ and the church. Song of Solomon 8 and verse 6. Says, set me as a seal upon thine heart, as a seal upon thine arm, for love is strong as death. Jealousy is cruel as the grave. The coals thereof are coals of fire, which hath a most vehement flame. Jealousy is the rage of a man. And right there it tells you, that's what a love for your wife and the thought of losing that generates, a most vehement flame. It says, jealousy is the rage of a man. Rage is madness, insanity, a fit or excess of... excess? Excess?
I bet it was excess.
I wonder if that's another spelling of excess, because I copied and pasted, so I didn't...
Oh.
Because it makes more sense to say excess, but I wonder if that's one of those words that was spelled differently back in those days. Yeah. I was reading that when I was reviewing that, and I was reading it, and I was reading it as excess, and I'm like, what? Well, that says access, right? So I don't know. Anyway, excess, which I think is excess of mania. It is madness, folly, rashness, an instance of this, a foolish act, violent anger, furious passion, usually as manifested in looks, words, or action, a fit or access of such anger. Angry disposition. So it's interesting there that rage has a combination of two things. Primarily, it's madness or insanity. And then secondarily, it's violent anger. We normally think of and use the word rage meaning violent anger. But it does make sense that jealousy is the rage of a man, like the madness, the insanity, which when you think about somebody that is violently angry and they are in a rage, they are basically insane at that moment. They're out of their mind. They are not thinking. You see somebody that gets to that point where he's just totally out of control of himself. He's just red in the face, screaming, completely out of control. That is insanity. Insanity is whenever your mind is not controlling your body anymore, right? You're out of your mind, and that's exactly what somebody, the place they get whenever they're in such a rage. So the jealousy of a husband for his wife when another man tries to take her will make him furious to the point of insanity. And this is probably why men have killed other men whenever they found them with their wives. And they probably could have been diagnosed as temporarily insane at that moment, were doing something that they would have never done before, but they were out of it. And I don't know of a specific instance of that, but I would be willing to bet in the last 6,000 years there have been men that have killed other men that found them with their wives. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt about that.
Is it the same with women?
I suppose. Yeah, I mean, they would definitely get as jealous, whether women are not quite as aggressive. But then again, woman finds her husband with another woman, and if she had access to some kind of a weapon, I wouldn't be surprised. There's an old saying that hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, so they can get pretty nasty themselves. So his wrath will turn into violent anger, which will not be tempered by rational self-restraint. And people who are in a rage do foolish and harmful things. I got Bible for that in Acts chapter 4, 25 through 26. And if you are stupid enough to commit adultery, as a man, humanly speaking, I would say, look up the woman's husband on Facebook and see how big he is, first of all. And if you're dumb enough to do it, you better pick somebody that has a smaller husband than you are, because you're really asking for it. Or maybe I shouldn't say that. Maybe I should just keep my mouth shut and have you pick the woman with the big husband, and that way you'll be taken care of and we won't have to worry about idiot repeat offenders. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Acts 4 and verses 25 through 26. You'll recognize this verse. This was a prophecy of the crucifixion, of the conspiracy to crucify the Lord Jesus Christ. It says, "Who by the mouth of thy servant David hath said, Why did the heathen rage, and the people imagine vain things? The kings of the earth stood up, and the rulers were gathered together against the Lord and against his Christ." The heathen raged. Remember, rage is madness and insanity. There's never been a more insane thing than to conspire together to murder the Son of God, God manifest in the flesh. That is the craziest, stupidest thing ever. Because you're literally conspiring to murder God, who has the power to destroy you forever in hell. I mean, you can't get a more insane thing than that. So yes, people that are in a rage do foolish and harmful things. And that husband, the offended husband, will likewise do things like that. Then the second half of the verse, Proverbs 6:34, says, "Therefore he will not spare in the day of vengeance." So because of his rage that is brought on by his jealousy, he's not going to spare. When jealousy is stirred, it provokes vengeance. Look at Nahum, back in the Minor Prophets, Nahum 1 and verse 2. Nahum 1:2. Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum. It says, "God is jealous, and the Lord revengeth. The Lord revengeth and is furious. The Lord will take vengeance on his adversaries, and he reserveth wrath for his enemies." So you talk about not sparing in the day of vengeance. When you get jealous and angry, here the Lord is the example, that whenever his jealousy has been provoked, he will have vengeance on his adversaries, and he won't spare. Vengeance is the act of avenging oneself or another. Retributive infliction of injury or punishment, hurt or harm done from vindictive motives. Now, we should not avenge ourselves. We should leave vengeance to the Lord. Look at Romans 12 and verse 19. The key word there is should. I'm not saying that that's always what happens. As a matter of fact, a lot of times, more times probably than not, we take vengeance in our own hands. We don't want to wait. And furthermore, we probably think that we can get the person better than God can anyway. I can take care of that guy probably better than the Lord can. That's what we think in the moment. Now, of course, that's not right thinking, right? When you're in a rage and you're insane and you're mad, right, then you're not thinking correctly. Romans 12 and verse 19, "Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath." That means, you know, set it off to the side. Give place unto wrath. "For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord." The Lord will take care of that. And as Christians, we always have to remember that. We do not want to take vengeance ourselves. Don't take it into your own hands, because you know what you do? If you do that, you, instead of having God's wrath aimed at the person that sinned against you, that offended you, if you take vengeance into your own hands, you turn God's wrath against you, because now you're the sinner. Now, he may punish the other guy too, but you're going to be punished. And that's really stupid. It says he will not spare in the day of vengeance. Spare is to leave a person unhurt, unharmed, or uninjured, to refrain from inflicting injury or punishment upon, to allow to escape, go free, or live, usually with personal object. Now, that definition actually was last used in 1300, so it's obsolete. It was obsolete at the time of 1600. But it's interesting there that he will not spare, he will not leave unhurt or unharmed or uninjured. Well, that makes perfect sense. Secondly, spare means, and this is usually how we would think about it, to exercise or show mercy, forbearance, or leniency. You know, spare me the punishment, spare me the whatever. But it's certainly the primary definition fits here like a glove, that he will not spare. He will not leave unharmed or uninjured the person that tries to take his wife. So there will be no mercy shown to the adulterer by the offended husband. So the person that commits adultery, you better be looking over your shoulder for a long time afterwards, because maybe you won't be caught up, maybe you won't be caught for a while, or maybe the husband is extra calculating, and maybe he'll wait for a while, and he'll wait until you're not ready for it or you're not paying attention. People do that. I mean, they might wait for a long time, and then your time will come. So grieving and offending God should be reason enough, but this is just an extra reason to never commit adultery. All right, that takes care of verse 34.